following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Don't let the College World Series finals distract you from the fact that Auburn just got another commitment. It's Thursday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Christian Griffin here with you inside the studio. Happy rainy, disgusting Thursday. It didn't feel that way earlier, and my goodness, about 45 minutes, an hour ago, it started absolutely pouring, and I even got the notifications that the Braves game got postponed this afternoon, and so that's how you know that there's a whole lot of weather working through the state of Alabama into Georgia as well, but still a great day to have a great day, and we plan on doing that here this afternoon. Appreciate everybody for being here with us again on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. As I mentioned, I'm Christian Griffin, and I welcome in Tripp Upton, the man with me here every single day. My man, happy Thursday. Hopefully all is well in your world. Did you like the intro right there? That was a completely mental timer. My headset would not plug in, and so I missed the little chord a couple of times, and so the intro was just purely hopeful that it was timed outright.
Right off the dome, dude. That's impressive. Happy Thursday. It's another great day to talk sports in Auburn. It is pouring rain outside, but we're here in the studio. It's dry in the studio, and we're going to talk to you all about Auburn Athletics. Got some great guests for y'all today as well, our normal Thursday guest, and we'll be talking College World Series, U.S. Open, and everything you want to hear about.
Should be a whole lot of fun here this afternoon. You mentioned it, U.S. Open we got going on. It's the first day, this week? It feels like it's the first day in forever where there has not been a College World Series game going on while we are on the air.
I know. I mean, I'm not mad that we get to watch some golf. A lot of tough course conditions today. I mean, when Rory McIlroy is the leader at only 3 under and it's all the way to 7th place is even, it's going to be interesting to see where the cut line is. We'll be able to talk about all about what Jackson Koivin and Logan Riley are looking like and how their days shaped up this morning and a whole lot more.
Yeah, should be a whole lot of fun here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. And as you mentioned, two wonderful guests we have joining us, our usual Thursday afternoon guests at 2:30. Didn't speak with them last week, but excited to catch up and talk all things Auburn football as the recruiting is on an absolute tear. Get some more updates for Auburn baseball as well as we hit just the summer conversations and a lot of hypotheticals, a lot of question marks that will be asked here this afternoon with Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, and then once again with Chris Gordy in the second hour at 3:30. But really, really expecting a really fun show this afternoon, and if you want to be a part of it after the first, I guess I should say the phone lines close after the first 30 minutes, but at 30 minutes of every single hour. But up until then, the phone lines are wide open. If you would like to be a part of it, 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind, whether that's Auburn-related, whether that's Brendan Sorsby-related, whether that's water polo-related, we will do our best to try and get that. I know that's something that you participated on a whole lot in.
Sure, yeah. I've poloed in the water. Some could say that.
Did you ever, when you were a kid, you still are a kid.
No, I'm not.
Did you ever set up the, I don't know exactly what they're called, but the little chairs at the pool that have this, like, almost like the blinds.
It's like elastic, yes.
Did you ever lay those sideways and play with like a spike ball and make it like a water polo?
No, but one time we put them in the bottom of the pool because we were trying to take, like, just we thought it was funny, and the cops got called on us. So that was it. I didn't do it. My friends did it. I just didn't stop them.
I mean,
I mean, it was.
You did not have a single say in it whatsoever.
I was guilty by association. It was
Texas Tech. They're Cincinnati, where it's like, don't even blame me. Blame them because they knew about it too.
Well, yeah, and it was at my neighborhood pool, so that was also part of the problem. That's why I had to send an apology letter to the HOA. It was a whole ordeal,
all for putting the chairs in the bottom of the pool
because they were worried that it was going to scratch up the lining of the pool, and they'd have to get it repaired or something. But it's HOA being HOA back up in Cartersville, Georgia. So, but no, yeah, I never did that. That is something I'm going to have to try.
Oh, it was awesome. Back in the day, that was
more pool basketball.
That was essentially the same thing of pool basketball, where it started off as a gentleman's game and ended with bloody noses and faces full of concrete.
Attempted drownings.
Yeah.
Sure.
Just friendly. It was mutual.
Oh, yeah. We had a buddy that had a pool, and he had a little goal on his pool, and I don't think I've ever been scratched up more in my life.
But it never starts. It always starts as good defense.
You get jump shots.
You get a couple fadeaways, a couple layups that maybe if you are able to make a play, and then all of a sudden, yeah, you crank up the heat and it becomes every man for himself.
It was grit and grind Grizzlies versus the late 80s Pistons, the bad boy Pistons, and it was always such a fun time, but it kind of hurt, especially when you had braces.
Ooh.
That was always, you were always worried about an elbow to the face and just a waterfall of blood.
No flagrant ones given out in the pool.
There was no referee.
Same concept for backyard water polo, essentially. So if you have thoughts on that, feel free to
yes.
give us a call, as you could almost walk outside and play water polo, at least what we're looking at.
I think the parking lot's flooded.
There is a nice little pool in the parking lots. During a break, we may have to go run out there, and we'll play some water basketball.
Yeah, we'll get Tracy to give us a weather report.
she can be the referee to make sure that
right.
hands stay to themselves, no elbows being thrown, anything
no.
like that. But we appreciate everybody for being here with us, and that is not the topic of conversation unless you want it to be here this afternoon. Again, 334-321-1390. Text box is always open as well at 334-784-1685. Again, 334-784-1OTL. And mentioned that we don't want to let the College World Finals distract the College World Series Finals distract us from what Alex Golish and what Auburn continue to do, but we do want to be able to dive into a little bit of the College World Series because the finals are set. Both teams that were in the winner's bracket moved on. There were no necessary games, and so because yes. of that, no games here this afternoon, and the first one gets started on Saturday night, so a little bit of a bullpen rest where both of these teams you expect to be at just about full strength. North Carolina, and just like everybody expected, the Oklahoma Sooners.
Right, you know, when me and Christian, we are smart because we both predicted an ACC team and an SEC team in the finals. We both thought it was Georgia Tech and Auburn. Instead, the Tar Heels and the Sooners. We've said it all the time. We were talking about it earlier. Me and Christian, we're on this Oklahoma team all the way back. I believe it was the May 5th edition. It was Mr. Goins' final show, and we were talking about, hey, who can make a run? Oklahoma was a name
5th,
thrown out.
Right?
June 5th, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not been
that long. I have been high on this Oklahoma team
yes.
since May 5th. You can give me credit for that.
Yeah,
I will happily
sure.
take it.
No, but June 5th, we both said that, and so it is really interesting to see this team out. Now, I will also hand up say I was a really big doubter of North Carolina, having them go out in two games instead of going to the national championship like you did, but you just picked the wrong Red River team.
I'll take that. I mean, again, we got the SEC, we got the ACC team, just like –
Just like
the good Lord expected, just
yeah.
like the way that it's meant to be.
The conference right? banners are the same. It's just different. The teams are wearing different colors, and that's okay.
Well, again, yesterday was one that we thought was not going to be very interesting, just based off of what we were able to see. I'm so glad that ad was silent because my computer was on. If you know, you know.
Excuse me?
But we had a running joke a long time ago because
okay.
every single day during a show, some sort of SportsCenter or ESPN ad would play on my computer, and that we got to the point of if we had shows on weekends, everybody would take a shot for every time that my computer played an
ad. Yes, that makes sense.
So
I can see that.
Hopefully not happening on a Thursday, but hey, if you were able to get off of work, I'm not going to sit here and judge anything.
Hey, by the time,
if anything, we're just jealous.
Yeah, by the time the show is over, it's 5 o'clock at least in Central Phoenix City, so
That's all you need to worry about. West Virginia and North Carolina. West Virginia, the Mountaineers, the home team yesterday, because again, if it goes to that if necessary game, the higher seed would be the home team. North Carolina struck for two in the top half of the first. West Virginia responded with one of their own. Both teams went scoreless in the second. And then North Carolina found their crooked numbers. Three in the third, three in the fourth, two in the sixth, two in the seventh, and all of a sudden they're up 12-1, and you're like, okay, all right, we said goodbye, we said have a great Wednesday afternoon, we're looking forward to the nightcap. This one's not going to get really special at all. North Carolina, welcome to the College World Series finals. And then we got off the air, and West Virginia was like, okay, let's put up a five spots in the home half of the seventh inning and make things a little bit interesting. Why not, right? And all of a sudden it was like, okay, well, there's only six outs and you still trust North Carolina because of their bullpen and what their team ERA looks like, because it's absolutely ridiculous. And who was it? Was it Jackson Rose for North Carolina that or was it who was it?
Gordon or something? I have to look at who their bullpen one. It was somebody.
Then if that's the case,
was it the 27-0 guy?
He might not have thrown, but it was one of their arms in the bullpen was 27-0 when he came out of the mound or came out and pitched for North Carolina. Very similar to the closer that you saw for Texas, who was like 32-1 whenever Texas whenever he made his way out onto the mound. But both of those, or I guess the latter one of those, did not stand true. North Carolina does defeat West Virginia 12-7. Again, it got a little interesting in the seventh. West Virginia scraped one across in the home half of the eighth, but even then it didn't necessarily feel as if North Carolina ever lost control of this game. It was more so just West Virginia making a couple of really nice plays and capitalizing on some really key opportunities. But North Carolina, 12 runs on 16 hits, 7 runs on 12 hits, and two very, very costly errors for West Virginia that ultimately allowed the Tar Heels to quote-unquote cruise to the College World Series final. But it was the game last night that we wanted to dive into here this afternoon, because, my goodness, is there a team hotter in college baseball right now than the Oklahoma Sooners? And I don't really love using that term of everybody love, you know, you got to get hot at the right time. You got to go through the losses and you just got to get hot at the right time and hope that the chips fall the way that you hope they do. And I don't necessarily, what a shot.
Yeah, I can never do that.
Who was that?
Putnam or something?
Oh, gosh, we're like dogs with squirrels out in the trees. We look up and see a good shot. He put that to, I mean, a foot. And
yeah.
It's he'll have a tap-in double bogey just by how hard the U.S. Open has played right now. But yes. Oklahoma wins it 11-4 over the Georgia Bulldogs. They forced Georgia to go scoreless in the first four innings of the contest before finally putting up a run in the home half of the fifth inning. But by that time, Oklahoma had already put up four. And my goodness, the confidence is oozing out of this Sooners team right now between Jason Walk, Trey Gamble, Brendan Brock, Desaun Harris, who went yard twice last night, had five RBIs. And even went deep on a bunt opportunity. And my goodness, you want to talk about, I guess it's more so once you got to second, it wasn't as much of a bunt opportunity, but one of the things of modern day baseball right there. Why lay down a bunt, Kent Murphy, when you can just go deep and hit a bomb, right? We don't lay bunts down here. And Oklahoma was able to capitalize on every single Georgia mistake that they had. Didn't necessarily have an error, but walked a couple of batters that turned very, very crucial. And Oklahoma finds their way through the winner's bracket, just like everybody expected, going all the way back to regionals and super regionals. We did pick them for the super regionals, but definitely not the regionals. And the announcers talked all about it, of how, man, nobody was talking about this Oklahoma team. And then they had to go, you realize if they won this one, they had to match up with Georgia Tech and Atlanta. And it was like, okay, well, all right, cute season. Congrats. Very nicely done. See you next year. Then they go and they beat Georgia Tech, who was the favorite to win the whole thing if it wasn't for UCLA. and you see, or then Oklahoma just continued to rattle off wins. My goodness, the pitching staff looks absolutely dominant, as did the offense last night. They won it 11-4 over the Dogs.
Yeah, Oklahoma has been, again, you said it, one of the hottest teams in the country. 83 runs since losing to Georgia Tech in the second game of the regional.
Wow.
So once they got their back to the wall, they never looked back. I mean, 83 runs in what? I want it like seven games is impressive. Even they only have 17 10 plus run games all year. But I look at Oklahoma and I see a team that they played well. Georgia just didn't take advantage of opportunities. You looked with the bases loaded, they walked in a run. It was a two run game. The Dogs had some dangerous hitters up and hit into an out.
Yeah.
Then the floodgates open, home runs from big contributors, people getting running on the base paths. It seemed like Oklahoma had a guy at second and third the entire second half of that game. Jason Walk hit a home run, who went to my high school for his freshman year. I think he was in my personal fitness class.
Well, there you go. I think you can claim that now.
I think I can claim that, yeah, for sure. So congratulations, Mr. Walk. But It was just a home run derby for the Sooners. And yes, UGA had their moments. You saw Branch hitting a home run to end his Georgia career. That was storybook. Daniel Jackson had another curtain call after a double that they put on a pinch runner. So good for Wes Johnson for giving his guys and from opportunity. That's a great fan base they have that surround the Diamond Dogs. But Oklahoma has just been transcendent. The pitching has been transcendent, and their hitting was already great. It got turned up to another level, and I'm very curious to see kind of how their it's not against bad competition. They beat four regional hosts: number two GT, number three Georgia, number seven Alabama, and number 15 Kansas. They're battle tested, Christian.
They are. They're very, very much so battle tested. And you look at what Georgia did offensively, or what I should say they did not do, and it's what they did all season long. The success that they had at the plates just did not carry with them to Omaha. And there are some stories of the jokes of, okay, well, it wasn't Foley Field. I'm not going to call it that, because even the balls they hit out at Foley Field would have left in just about every single stadium. But after putting up seven runs in the very first game against Texas, they scored three, they scored two, and they scored four. And two of those games were against Oklahoma. They lost both times to Oklahoma. And so, again, Wes Johnson, that offense that you've heard all about at LSU, and he was so good of the offense sputtering when you make your way to Omaha, happened yet again for the Georgia Bulldogs. We're going to take our first break here on this Thursday afternoon. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. I have a phone call to get to as well when we return here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. Christmas night, 1776. The American Revolution was nearly lost. General George Washington and his ragged Continental Army faced freezing winds along the Delaware River. Many soldiers had no boots. Morale was collapsing. But Washington had one bold idea. Cross the river. Surprise the Hessian troops in Trenton. In darkness and snow, the Army pushed boats through ice. By morning, they attacked. The victory was small in numbers, but enormous in spirit. The Revolution lived to fight another day. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. The American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Off and rolling here on this Tuesday, or the Thursday afternoon. Wow, it feels like Tuesday.
Yeah.
This has been a very long day. I have a cup of coffee sitting next to me, if that tells you anything.
Yeah.
But a rainy Thursday afternoon. And the phone lines are open as we continue talking a little bit of College World Series here this afternoon. 334-321-1390. And that's where we head for the first time this afternoon. Michael and Auburn, you're on the line. Hopefully all is well in your world. Hopefully trying to stay dry a little bit.
Yeah, I'm trying to, guys. And y'all may have mentioned it. And I don't know if it's the last name or not, but the Georgia player, I think it was Branch,
yes.
but he hits the home run, and his brother actually plays for Oklahoma.
Yes.
And so I don't know if it was Branch, but there was a Georgia player that his brother plays for Oklahoma and plays short or third. And so when he was rounding the bases, he actually gave him a high five, and it was a kind of a moment. I guess my question would be, if you were playing against your brother, for or against, if you were the guy hitting the home run, or you know, if you were the guy in the field, would you acknowledge it, or would you just like clap in your glove? What would you do? And did y'all see that? I'll hang up and listen, guys.
Thanks. Yes, sir. Yeah, Michael, appreciate you for calling in, and a fantastic question. And yeah, it's a really, really good point as well. Yes, it was the Branch brothers. One plays third for Georgia, or one plays short for Georgia. The other one plays second for Oklahoma. And the videos are absolutely incredible because
yeah.
The Sooner brother playing second base is teary eyed because he understands that this is his brother's final collegiate at bat, and the fact that he went deep and after rounding, or as he was rounding second base, being able to acknowledge him is really, really cool. And by no means is this fortunate just in terms of overall baseball for Georgia, but fortunate that the game was relatively out of hand at that point, because
yeah.
if that was a game tying or go ahead home run, or even if it was 5-3 and that home run cut it to 5-4, I don't think there's any acknowledgement. But it's the fact of it being a little bit out of hand makes it a little bit easier, a little bit more sentimental, and a really, really cool moment. It just shows that unprofessionally, baseball is just freaking awesome.
Yeah, honestly, I think if I was the pitcher that gave the home run, yeah, I wouldn't acknowledge it. If anything, I'm saying some choice words when I'm rounding the base path. But if you're like, again, the second baseman didn't give up a home run, you know, throw it better, bro. Like I would probably do the same thing. And again, you said it, I think that is a good point of that the game was out of reach. They already put the graphics in the package of like, you know, the conference tournament champions that have already lost, and
right.
Georgia was on there, and it was like, Georgia can tie this game or win this game if they go, you know, score 10 runs. But that is, it's a good moment. It's just why, you know. Well, how do people are not romantic about baseball? You know, the old time quote, but that was really cool to see, even as someone that is never been a big Georgia fan or doesn't
no.
real apathetic about Oklahoma. That is cool to see.
It was. And so Kyle Branch is the second baseman for Oklahoma. And then it was Colby Branch, who had a pretty solid day, went 2-for-3, and hit that home run in his final collegiate at bat. And it was cool not only from that standpoint, for him to be able to acknowledge his brother, but get the kind of the curtain call from the bullpen, the curtain call, and not quite a curtain call, but be able to tip your cap to the bullpen, tip your cap to the fans that were still there, and to the dugout as well. And then you mentioned Daniel Jackson getting essentially a call-off curtain call after hitting a double, getting pinch hit for, and being able to run back into the dugout. But one of the coolest things, if not the coolest thing about that moment, was they showed the Branch parents all afternoon and all evening, and they had done the half Georgia, half Oklahoma jersey and had them almost stitched together at the buttons, and they had the hats that said Branch and everything. The home plate umpire was able to find the parents afterwards, and they gave him the scorecard. And I think
saw
that
dude.
I think, man, you want to talk about like a parent trying to keep your composure, and by no means can I speak on this as a 25-year-old non-married, child-bearing person, individual, not that I'd be the bearing
ones. I'd be concerned
ones,
if you were bearing a child.
the father figure, but very much an empath, and the ability or the lack thereof to, man, maintain my composure if I was given the scorecard for a moment like that, one of my son's final games, and being able to hit a home run in your final moment, and not only in your final game, but to do it in the promised land, to do it in Omaha, Nebraska at the Chuck. It's absolutely incredible.
Against the other son that's named also on the same scorecard that's going to the national championship
yeah.
games. That's really cool for the Branch parents.
I wonder if they brought three jerseys. One of them was the split between the Georgia-Oklahoma. One's a full Oklahoma jersey and one's a full Georgia jersey.
100%.
Because
and
now you don't need the other one.
They had the hat that said Natty. So
yes.
I guess that's what they're rooting for. One of y'all is going to go. Just pick which one. And so that's so cool. You're not going to find that in any other sport. Like you're not going to get the I don't even know what it would be for. You're not going to get the penalty flag for football or
who was it? Is it? Mama Kelsey that was able to wear Travis. Jason. Yep, there we go.
There we go.
Arguably, yeah, turning into the more popular one.
I don't know. I think Travis is the more. I mean,
maybe not by talent, but in terms of entertainment.
I mean, you know, I know to step out how big the world is.
Hey, wasn't Mr. Jason Kelsey named like the sexiest man alive last year?
Sure, yeah, but also.
I mean, you were the one that gave me that information.
No, I didn't.
Like you didn't have that on the
No,
rundown.
I did not. You're lying. No, it's more of the when you take a world out of the, just out of sports. Travis Kelsey is marrying the biggest person, probably on the one of the biggest people on the planet, Taylor Swift. Unfortunately, like truthfully, he's probably more well known, but. I don't know. I think both are NFL Hall of Famers. That's what I'm going to do.
Right, but I know she wore the Chiefs jersey and the Eagles jersey and split them between the two.
That's nice.
Which, so you will see it in other sports, okay?
Oh, yeah. That's
you said fine. You wouldn't see it in other sports.
Well, I'm saying you wouldn't, like the lineup card. That's what I'm more talking about. You would not see the lineup card get to another sport.
I see what you're saying.
Yes.
The umpire wouldn't, or official wouldn't walk up and give a penalty.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Yes. The jerseys will be there, but not the scorecard or whatever.
No. But again, a really, really cool moment. And I'm glad that caught as much popularity as it did because it should. Because. Again, that's one of those things of it being so much bigger than just baseball. And really, really cool to see. But North Carolina, as many people did expect, and North Carolina is the outstanding favorite right now, at least as of yesterday. As soon as the game had gone final between Georgia and Oklahoma, they were big-time favorites. Do we have the updated
odds? I will say, though, for North Carolina, just a couple quick stats about them. They only played one regional host, number 16, West Virginia. They only allowed 31 runs in the tournament and only had five shutouts this season. So it's going to be strength on strength with these two teams. It's UNC pitching versus OU's hitters.
North Carolina has a 62% chance of winning the whole thing. And so you can take that odd for what you will. I think... game one, Saturday evening, North Carolina, a heavy, heavy favorite. And when you look at, again, their starting arms, their top two arms, it's basically double-A talent that you're going to be facing. But OU, again, the hottest team arguably in the entire country right now. I say that as if they're not one of the two final teams. They probably are the hottest team in college baseball right now because North Carolina handled business. Oklahoma, very, very much battle-tested just in terms of what the SEC looks like and then what Omaha has looked like for them as well. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll get them up some updates from Auburn baseball as well as some thoughts on Auburn football as recruiting continues to be on an absolute tear. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joins us next.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
To the Thursday edition of On the Line. And again, Schilt just trying to stay dry. It is continuing to pour across the Auburn Opelika area, but we head to Auburn University and the Auburn Sports Network with someone that has been cemented into this 2:30 time slot for a long, long time. Mr. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. And Brad, you know, out of town last weekend, how did you enjoy the vacation now that the athletic season has come to a close for Auburn University?
Yeah, I'd have rather been in Omaha, but you know, but when you can't control it, you got to go, okay, what's next? And so we had a little beach time. We always like going, and this year was especially good because there were no jellyfish. The last few years, I think we've been 3 years in a row or 2 years in a row where we had some pretty decent jellyfish, and we're pretty risk averse when it comes to jellyfish
right
in our bunch. So not as much ocean time, but we got it this time for sure. So it was a good time, really good time.
We're talking with Brad Law, the Auburn Sports Network, and Brad, the main topic right now in whatever's going on with Auburn Athletics is Alex Golish on the recruiting trail. Another commit last night. Auburn already an easy place to recruit to, but what is Coach Golish doing that makes you think that his staff can get in, get anybody they want to in the country?
Well, they scout better than anybody I've seen up close in a long time. I obviously don't know what they do at other programs, but they have a large staff that just, when Alex Golish says, be who you say you are, you better be authentic or else it's not going to work. And now he's got a proven track record of doing this long enough that it's easy to believe he is who he says he is. And when he says that he and his staff are going to work harder than anybody else in the country, they're doing that. That's authentic. And so they're relentless in their scouting, and then they're relentless in their communication. And then they have developed a why. They are upfront, authentic, truthful with these kids when they talk about what the experience is going to be like. And, if the hard work isn't what the kid wants, there's probably a better place somewhere in the country for that kid. And I think parents, family members, and then the players themselves respond to that kind of blue-collar authenticity, man, I'm going to tell you exactly what it's going to be like, and then it's going to be exactly that way. Clearly, they've responded to it to this point.
And the big place where this has been responded to is, for some reason, the state of Maryland. One of the biggest pipelines in the country is that Maryland to Auburn pipeline. Talk about the work that DJ Durkin has been able to do getting up there and turning that into a slam dunk territory for this team.
There for a couple of years. As the head coach, so he developed relationships there, and there have been some other connections there as well. But that's a sneaky talent rich area,
right,
of the country. That DC Metro, Virginia, Virginia Tech kind of became a powerhouse for a while 20-25 years ago by getting a bunch of kids from that upper Virginia, DC, Maryland, Baltimore area, and now they're tapping into that. DJ Durkin is another guy from being around him. He's like, this is how it is. This is the way it's going to be. And it's hardworking. It's good energy, good effort, and it's consistency. Everybody's got great facilities. And everybody's got a great weight room. And everybody's got nutritionists. And everybody's got, the top programs all have this kind of thing.
Right.
So what's the differentiator? The differentiator sometimes is accessibility to coaches, or just authenticity. This is what I was told was going to happen, and now this is what's happening.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the Thursday edition of On the Line. And Brad, I know that pressure is not the right word whatsoever when talking about Alex Golish, especially in year one before he's even coached a football game in the orange and blue. But he's not somebody that likes to go about what he does silently in terms of just the success that he brings. And when you look at this recruiting trail and the recruiting hype that he has brought, what do you think this speaks from him to the fan base, just in terms of year one? This is not just going to be some rebuild. There's excitement now. There is momentum now. What do you think he is indirectly speaking to the fan base, just in terms of what they've been able to do on the recruiting side of things?
So I think it's a good question. I don't want to dodge the question, but I want to acknowledge that I don't think he's saying anything indirectly.
Sure.
I think he's saying it directly. I think that, again, this is more of I am who I said I am, and this is what happens. The recruiting at Auburn going well is what happens when you have a good product to sell already and then someone who works relentlessly to sell it. And I don't think that's a silent message. I think that's I'm doing what I said I was going to do. And I don't think it's necessary to deliver silent messages. Again, that's not to be combative on the question. I think it's a good question. I think that it's kind of like you got this recipe. You got some tomato sauce on the stove, and you're like, what does this need? Does this need anything else? No, I don't think so. I think it's pretty straightforward. I think you nailed it. And so that's what I think it is. I think it's a very loud message and a very direct message. Even if it's not indirectly to the fan base, it's absolutely something the fan base can look at and see before they have a chance to win a game. Like, I love people. Well, he hasn't won a game yet. Right, there hasn't been a game yet. So you can't really judge that's an unfair metric to judge by. What can we see? Can we see enthusiasm? Can we see can we see the effort? That's what you want to see.
Yeah.
Everybody who loves Auburn knows, like, this is an easy place to sell. They want to see their head coach have that same enthusiasm, and they've seen it so far.
You just got to get the guys on campus, and then when you put a winning product on the field, my goodness, it makes things just that much easier. Continuing to count down towards Atlanta with Auburn and Baylor following that, Southern Miss, and then a game inside Jordan-Hare Stadium that brings a whole lot of excitement to the fan base already. I believe we talked about it a little bit as soon as they released this time of Auburn and Florida, and this Florida team is relatively comparable to the Auburn Tigers just in terms of situation. With obviously a year one head coach and trying to manage what those expectations look like year one for the team as well as the future. And the people are really high on the Florida Gator team. Talk to us about what that excitement is going to look like inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium, with that being the one confirmed night game that Auburn's going to have at home, what that could look like from a recruiting standpoint, as well as just the mano-a-mano matchup of Sumrall versus Golish.
Well, first of all, I don't know that Golish is looking at it as Sumrall versus Golish. I think it's a really good, it's going to be an awesome storyline for those of us in the media the week leading up to the game. And it is going to be a small metric of comparison. Like, those guys are always going to be compared at these two stops.
Right.
And I don't think I think it's okay to admit that, you know? So, as for the atmosphere, night game, I do think it will matter to fans that they know it's the last home night game. I think they'll show out a little bit, but it's like even more than all that. If you go handle business against Baylor and Southern Miss, you get a chance to win your SEC opener, start the season 3-0, do what you haven't been able to do in a little while. We used to start 3-0 all the time, and it's been a while since there was that kind of momentum. I think it'll be absolutely fantastic. And for recruiting, the best recruiting, as great as the atmosphere is, the best recruiting will be to go win the ballgame and have proof of concept. AG was in Mobile two nights ago, and he said, you know, we've made up ground in recruiting and in these relationships. The next thing we need is proof of concept on the field. So they're very aware of the fact that winning games is the next step in that recruiting pitch.
Do I dare ask the question to you in terms of the three most important wins for the Auburn Tigers this year? Because, again, on the media side of things, that's what we've been able to dive into a little bit. And Tripp and I have both had Baylor and Florida up there towards the top. Do I dare ask you the top three, or is it more so just the next one?
Let's see. The coach's answer would be Baylor, Southern Miss, and Florida.
Right.
But I'm not a coach. So, yeah, I think Florida's pivotal because it's the first SEC game. I do think Vanderbilt, which is the very next week.
Sure, right.
If you beat Florida, then you have to beat Vanderbilt to keep that momentum. Mm-hmm. If you lose to Florida, you need to beat Vanderbilt to get some momentum back and avoid an 0-2 start to conference play. So I think Vandy's number two, and then I'll go the Iron Bowl three, and we know they're emphasizing it, as they should, because it's the best rivalry in college football. And so I don't care if a coach is in his first year, his goal is to win the Iron Bowl, or in his 10th year, his goal is to win the Iron Bowl. So that's how I'd put those.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, and switching gears now from the gridiron to the diamond with Auburn baseball. The games on the field may be done for the year for the Tigers, but the recruiting and the transfer portal is heating up. Talk to me about some of these prospects that have committed to the Tigers and that'll be joining Butch Thompson and this crew next season.
Yeah, Zach Stevens, kind of the one that was first in the boat, was the relief pitcher from South Alabama, has a year left, right-handed reliever. Is he taking a spot that, you know, was Drew Whalen's before his injury? Is he taking a spot that's Ryan Hetzler's if he winds up going in the draft? Or, you know, is there somebody else? They tried him as a starter this year at South Alabama. Didn't really work. He was very effective, though, very effective out of the bullpen. Mm-hmm. They brought in a couple of guys like a Ben Swales out of Iowa, middle infield type of guy at Iowa. didn't play the full season because of an injury. The really intriguing one, I think, is John, is it Brantley, I think is the name. Forgive me, I don't have it right in front of me. But the transfer from Georgia State really blossomed this past year. Numbers weren't very good. Outfielder, could be center field. You could move some other guys around, put him somewhere else in the outfield. But
yes,
as an outfielder last year for Georgia State, hit like 340 and change, about four home runs, but just consistently on base and very, very fast. So those were a couple of guys I saw just today or yesterday. They got a right-handed reliever out of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So you continue to bolster that pitching staff. I'm so curious about what the pitching staff will look like next year and the guys who decide to come back versus the guys who go in the draft, because they really only used about six or seven pitchers in games that were in the balance this past year. So is that the formula moving forward, or do you have other guys that allow you to not need to do that as much?
It's funny you say that, because it leads right into my final question for you, talking about there's been so many postseason honors. We know that EG was just named a Gold Glove finalist. Full season honors, Trace Frelick being a perfect game All-American. Where do you see that Butch will, or where do you think, rather, that Butch will have his strongest point at next year's team? Where are some spots that you think that they still might try and touch on in the transfer portal, as well as this high school recruiting class that's coming in, just to try and capitalize on what they have already on this team?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it's more into focus after the draft than after the portal window. Like I think
Auburn is
affected more by the draft than they are portal exits.
How nice is that to have to say?
Oh, it speaks to a couple of things. First, the stability of the staff, stability of the program. Guys genuinely like it here. And when they have opportunities, even though people have been pushing Chase Freitas. People have been coming after Chase.
Yeah.
People came after Ike Irish. Like, they've come after Auburn stars, but Auburn's established itself as also a premier program in the country. So, that's not the you're not trying to move a fish from a big pond or from a little pond to a big pond. Now you're trying to pluck these guys out of a big pond. This is a big program. So I think you got a lot of returners, all those sophomores, like an Andreas Alvarez, freshman L.J. Cormier, sophomore Jackson Sanders, that coming back, that's huge. Bub Terrell, Chase Frelick, and Brandon and Mason McCrane, and Ethan Bingaman, those are serious cornerstones that you can build around for next year. And I didn't leave anybody out intentionally. It was an accident if I did, but you got a lot of guys coming back who were critical this year, and we'll have another year under their belt next year.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. Brad, one last question before we let you go. What have been your thoughts on what's gone on in Omaha with a team that Auburn defeated during the regular season playing for the national championship in Oklahoma? Talk to me about what you've seen from Charles Schwab this week.
You know, what was interesting, and I didn't see some of the early games because, again, after Auburn was eliminated, I took a little bit of a baseball sabbatical, if you will.
I'm sure everybody did. Yeah, we did as well.
Yeah, but I thought it's interesting, looking back now, Butch Thompson he said it going into the Oklahoma series, but especially after, thought they were the team that was most like Auburn in terms of their offensive identity. They don't have a 25 home run, 75 RBI guy, but they have some consistent hitters in the lineup that can have some pop from time to time. They've got a young pitching staff. They're the most in composition. They were the closest to Auburn that Auburn faced all year long, and he had tremendous respect for Skip Johnson and the job that he's done with that program. Been there, I guess, a decade or close to it now. So to see them get hot, and that's what it's all about. That's what wins a team a national championship, get hot at the right time. And they're scorching right now. So it's not a total surprise because of what the head coach thought about Oklahoma after they left Plainsman Park. It's also not a surprise. It's not anything new that a team that finished in the back half of the standings is battle-tested enough to face a regional, to face a super regional, to face the competition you face in Omaha, because it's not like you've seen worse competition for 10 weeks in the SEC.
Brad Law, the Auburn Sports Network. Brad, thank you so much for joining us, as always, on 2:30 on Thursdays. Plug what you and the rest of the Auburn Sports Network have going on during the summer, coming up soon.
A lot of vacations is what we have going on.
There we go.
What a good problem to have.
There we go.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, is working on like game archives for the baseball rain delay that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So he's working on that, and we're talking to all of our radio affiliates across the state. But no, in terms of content, this is the slow time of year. So I'll tell you what, if you'll allow me, I'll plug the Barn. If you go to the Barn Auburn on YouTube or wherever you get audio podcasts, we have a bunch of different shows, including one I do with Zach Blackerby every weekday called Village Vice. And we'd invite you to check those out. Just look up the Barn Auburn on YouTube.
And on the Auburn Sports Network, just shirtless pictures of Brad Law at the beach flexing, right? That's all over vacation. That's where the people need to go.
Those are the premium services.
That's the ex-premium subscriptions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There are perks. Members only perks.
That's awesome. All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Brad. We'll talk to you soon, man.
My pleasure, guys. War Eagle.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, ripped and ready as ever. We'll take a break and wrap up hour number one of On the Line right after this.
You are On the Line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Well done, sir. I'm not going to congratulate you on the first ever interview, but very nicely done. On congratulations on being the co-host role. You know.
Yes. Thank you. Claps. I think I've done one when they had the baseball state championships. So I think I talked to Jacob, but I've talked to Jacob too dang much. You know, that's not an interview at that point. That's just talking to the old man.
It is. That's talking to the grumpy old man right there. But we talked about it a little bit before, and just, I mean, continuing to work into more comfort. And by no means are the
rookie tag is still on. But you know what? We're getting at bats. Maybe we moved up from ninth to eighth in the lineup, depending on righty lefty.
I think you're still a platoon guy.
To be honest,
you're just an everyday platoon guy. It used to be full platoon with Jacob, but now it's you are in that nine hole, the utility guy. You're the Charlie Culberson type of guy who you can put him anywhere from
young
first
Michael
to
Harris.
Third. Not as much because he's a lefty.
Sure, yeah.
Are you a lefty?
No, I'm not lefty.
Okay.
Well, maybe I should try and play golf lefty because you know how bad I am at golf.
Don't you hate on lefties? Don't you hate on...
I'm not.
Don't you hate on the southpaws?
I don't.
You can go and use my club next time we go. And maybe for all you know, that's why you're bad at golf. Because
exactly. That's what I was
saying.
You
need to be left-handed. Your parents just raised you the wrong way for 20 years of your life.
Sure, yeah. My youngest brother is like ambidextrous left-handed, but he plays golf right-handed, but he does everything else left-handed. It's so weird.
Well, there you go. Maybe we need to figure something out. We'll have an anomaly here.
Speaking of golf, U.S. Open.
Very nice. Nicely done.
Of course, for the 30 seconds before the music kicked us out, Koivun at one over, tied for 30th. Logan Riley, on the other hand, he is tied for 107th at plus 9. So
oh,
again,
man, that means that came out of nowhere, too.
What?
Riley's, he's had, because he started on the back and was two over after nine, and now he went, he's had two doubles on his second back, essentially the front nine. And
hey,
so,
it's reps for the young fella. I'm right there with him.
It's so cool to see Koivun tied with Fitzpatrick, with Sam Burns, with Ricky Fowler. That's really, really cool to see.
Right.
You see him ahead of a whole bunch of names, which is absolutely awesome. We'll continue to talk a little bit more about the U.S. Open in hour number two. Also, an Auburn and Florida comparison, talking about the positions and why we don't think there's enough people talking about the Auburn Tigers.
Is an Auburn Network production. You
are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, join us in hour number two, as well as Auburn and Florida, a ranking by position.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. Trip did, in fact, just go for a swim in the lake in our parking lot. And so no water polo was had, as we talked about in hour number one. But nice to see that you brought the swim trunks and you were able to go out for a nice little swim here this afternoon.
Yes, it was fun. Got to cannonball. It was a little too shallow to dive, but cannonball.
Those are just suggestions.
Yeah, there's just suggestions until you break your arm. I mean, goodness gracious. But no, yeah, I definitely was a good swim. Just got to dry off now. I try to get Trace to give me a towel, but she wouldn't.
Oh, man.
I know.
Oh, man.
She's saving it for herself when she has to roll out of here.
Very understandable.
Understand, yeah, 100%.
Had a fantastic hour number one and a whole lot of fun, if you can't tell. The rain just making us a little delusional here on ESPN 106.7. But we do appreciate everybody for being here with us in hour number one. Had a couple of U.S. Open updates as it continues to work its way down the home stretch here this afternoon. Looked at where the Auburn players stand. Jackson Koivunen at 1 over. Logan Riley at 9 over. A difficult back nine for him, which is essentially the front nine, as he started on 10 rather than on 1. But again, just the idea of being able to see Auburn players and see the success and the talent that they have. And heard this morning about, I'm not sure if it was the Golf Channel or the Golf Network or whatever, they gave a shout out to Auburn when they showed Jackson Koivunen's putt, talking about the recent national championship. And so congratulated the Auburn Tigers, and really cool just to see and hear that side of things. But talked a little bit about that. We also had a really fun conversation with Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, talking about the recruiting and how it continues to be on a tear. We will dive into that a little bit more here in hour number two, about the safety that committed to the Tigers last night and how Mr. Trevon Reed, we ain't done yet. There's another Auburn Tiger that's crystal balled, scheduled to commit tomorrow night. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that and the tremendous job that Alex Golish, DJ Durkin, and this entire staff continue to put together in terms of the 2027 recruiting class. And we talked a little bit about the College World Series as well, as the finals are set. Both teams from the winner's bracket moved on in one game. They did not need that, if necessary, that elimination game. North Carolina defeated West Virginia, and the surprise of the College World Series, I guess you would say from the national media, they would not tell you that they're surprised whatsoever, but Oklahoma defeating Georgia I'm saying it like it is, a big-time upset series, essentially, with those two teams meeting and Oklahoma giving Georgia their two losses in Omaha. And so talked all about that, talked about the paths that both teams took and some of the big stats from those two teams. All of that was in hour number one. And if you missed any of it, you can always check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And we've got some great conversations planned for hour number two. We'll talk to Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast, get his thoughts on the quote-unquote conclusion of the Brendan Sorsby saga, as well as the SEC's performance in Omaha. Again, as Christian alluded to earlier, we'll talk a lot more recruiting, kind of talk about the latest Tiger to commit, as well as one potentially committing tomorrow, even another one that is rumored as well. And we'll also talk, again, with Auburn and Florida. We talked about this a lot yesterday with the coaching perspective. We're going to take a look at the position groups and see how they compare and stack up and see if this hype that the Gators have in the preseason is warranted. I'm very curious to hear your opinion about it, Christian, and I'm even curious to hear your opinion listening to this show right now. Go ahead. You have 30 minutes before Chris Gordy joins. The phone lines are open, 334-321-1390, 334-321-1390 for the phone line. For the text box, 334-784-1OTL. With the numbers for that are 334-784-1685. And Christian, let's dive deep into these position groups for both Auburn and Florida. Again, remind people of kind of why we are talking about this and the article and the opinion that Mr. Tom Fornelli has for all the Florida Gators.
Yeah, talking about, again, this was a CBS article written by Tom Fornelli, and funny enough, he wrote it with the title in third person, Five College Football Teams That Tom Fornelli Can't Quit Going Into 2026, written by Tom Fornelli, sub-written by Tom Fornelli, edited by Tom Fornelli, published by Tom Fornelli.
Yes. Proofread by Tom Fornelli.
Yes.
Photography potentially by Tom Fornelli. I don't know.
That actually says Getty Images right there. And
if you didn't know, actually, he owns it, Getty Images. So you don't have to worry about that as the Trip Upton and Christian Griffin talk on the line with Trip Upton and Christian Griffin.
Yeah. Kristen Griffin.
Kristen Griffin. Some say that. Not me, but some say that.
No, just kidding.
Kidding.
We are getting updates on that, though. threw me off.
Yeah.
Christian Griffin threw himself off trying to figure out where to go from that. Tom Fornelli did write an article. He titled it Ready to Get Hurt Again, and basically five teams that he doesn't like that he feels this way, but that he keeps going to when looking at success in the 2026 season. He mentioned teams like Kansas State, Michigan State, USC, shocker, and then Virginia Tech, just with the ACC and James Franklin in year one, the amount of talent that he brought with him from Penn State, as well as from the transfer portal. But the very first team that he mentions is the Florida Gators. And he says that this Florida team, who is slated right now for 7.5 wins, he doesn't just see 8-4 being in their future as a possibility. He sees a college football playoff berth as a legitimate possibility, talking about just the talent that he sees. And he says there's no single factor about this team that gives him a real big-time edge over feeling a certain way, but mentions what John Sumrall as just a coach, and says that in some of these tight games, coaching is going to be a big time difference maker, which is the conversation that we took yesterday with Alex Golish versus John Sumrall, and not necessarily going at what they're doing at their current regimes of Auburn and Florida, but more so at Tulane and South Florida and the programs that they took over and the success that those programs had had prior to them taking over. And by no means was it acting as if either of those coaches were obviously not calling Alex Golish a bad coach, and obviously also not calling John Sumrall a bad coach,
no.
But just talking about the transition and the journey that those two coaches have had with the HC written by their name. And so while taking a step aside from the coach perspective, did want to dive into the player-by-player perspective just in terms of Auburn and Florida. And this all boils down to the fact that Auburn and Florida play each other week three inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, the night game, the lone night game that that Auburn was gifted in terms of the TV windows and the amount of excitement that is going to bring, and how, again, these teams are on very similar trajectories as of late, what they're expected to do this year. Yet a lot of people are saying that Florida has the higher ceiling working its way into the next future, or the near future, with the next couple of years. And just wanted to give a little side-by-side comparison. We'll do this throughout the summer, and so not officially the first team that we are truly breaking down, but
no.
Here in segment number one, did want to talk a little bit about those two teams.
Yes. So let's, where do you want, I guess we're going to start with the quarterbacks here.
I feel like it's, unless you want to start in the trenches where everything is built.
Sure. Let's do that. Let's talk about the trenches. Because Auburn has had one good trench side and the other one has been a little bit suspect as of late. I think you look at the offensive line for Auburn as being something that's always been in flux, whether it be you can't run block for Jarquez Hunter or Tank Bigsby, or you can't pass block for Peyton Thorne, or you're jumping offside or false starting every single down. As some left tackles decide to do or some players decide to do for Auburn. But the defensive side of the football has been phenomenal. NFL pass rushers, and it's been very dominant recently. And looking at this year's squad, they retain a lot of talent on that front. Jared Smith and Malik Autry are two names that come to mind for me. Yes, you do lose Malik Blockton, which I think is a big loss. But for Auburn, I really think that their defensive line is among one of the better ones in the SEC.
Yeah, I think it's when you're comparing what this team is going to, or what these teams are going to look like, it's going to be a little bit of a strength on, I don't want to say weakness for either team, but a strength on not a strength and then a strength on not a strength. I think that I am very much willing to tip the cap for Auburn's defensive line. And it was actually a Sports Illustrated article that I saw from the Texas Longhorn perspective about ranking the SEC offensive lines. And they ranked Florida as the 16th best offensive line in the SEC. And for those that don't understand, that is 16th out of 16th. They have Auburn at 14th. And so if that is the case, the defensive lines are going to very much eat in these contests, as the kids would say, and I very much love what Auburn wants to do on the defensive front.
Yes, looking at the offensive line perspective, though, for a second, with this past season, again, a lot of starters in the transport area, you can't really look at last year's stats and apply them to this year's stats, but 20 sacks allowed for Florida's offensive line. Do you want to know how many Auburn allowed?
Oh, no.
Take a guess.
Hold on. I know that they were – what was the stat Jacob and I brought up? And I talked about it a lot last year.
I don't know. I wasn't here.
Fair. Christian was asking Christian in third
yes.
person. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was something, believe it or not, it was in terms of sacks and
– would you
gosh,
like
to- I don't remember exactly. I'm going to guess 28 and a half.
42.
Oh, my.
Jackson Arnold sacked 30 times, Ashton Daniels 10, even Deuce Knight in his lone appearance was sacked twice.
That's 42, is it 42 and a half? Or, I mean, not that it changes. 40.
No, just 42 flat versus
20. There we go. Hey, it could be better. I thought it was 42 and a half.
You can't really get a half sack as a quarterback. You, the defense can get a half
that's
sack.
Fair. Yeah, good call.
Yes, but that is something. And then meanwhile, in the running room, they had 1,641 rushing yards, a big majority of those coming from Jade Baugh, who returns, who's one of the best running backs in the SEC. The Tigers, though, had 2,000 rushing yards based on a unit of Jeremiah Cobb, Ashton Daniels, Jackson Arnold. Deuce Knight had almost 200 in his one game. Damari Alston was very good as well. Again, and Omar Mabson there at 71. And so that's a lot. And funny enough, Hudson Cock on this list, minus 12. Did not know that he had recorded a stat, but good for our good for friend of the show, Hudson Cock.
It was not intentional.
Was not intentional, right. But was that the one that he picked up the ball with his knee down?
No, it was at Oklahoma. The snap rolled to him, and he tried dodging one defender and tried taking off because – the snap was very poor.
Right.
And began running and got his ankles clipped. Basically, dude dove and hit one ankle and it tripped into the other one. And that led to, I believe that led to an OU touchdown.
Right, yeah. But anyway, yes.
Yes, good friend of the show.
Yes, but I, looking at this unit, I think that the offensive line edge does go to Florida based on the fact that, yeah, they been, you know, the running game had not been great. As effective as Auburn's was by about 600 yards or so. But I think that when you are not losing 10 different plays to sacks, I mean, those are just drive killers, no matter how many rushing yards you put up. So I think I'd give the offensive line edge to Florida. Meanwhile, defensively, they had 26 sacks as a team, while the Auburn Tigers had 31. So I think I'd give the slight edge defensively to Auburn.
Yeah, it makes sense. And how funny is it that, because I was about to say, well, the good thing about this is there are still so many question marks for this Auburn team. Well, there's so many question marks for the Florida team as well, which is the reason why this is going to be such a highly anticipated matchup, because this is Florida's first real road game. This is Auburn's first true home game against
they have a home game.
They do, and I don't want to say against quality competition because
Baylor
by no means
it's a home game. Just had that in Jordan-Hare Stadium.
True, my bad. Sorry. The first SEC home game because they also play Southern Miss. And that was more so the route I was going. Yes. I do not want to say anything about inferior competition, but still so many question marks, which makes these two teams, again, so comparable just in terms of what they want to do. Moving back, the running back room, which we mentioned, of Jaden Baugh being their main guy. Duke Clark is also a guy that's expected to get carries, a freshman who's worked his way up into that backup running back role. I think there's a lot of excitement for what he is going to bring. But unbiasedly, my goodness, I don't think that you could go away from not only just the running back of Jeremiah Cobb, but Nakai Davenport, Bryson Washington, Omar Mabson, as well as Byron Brown, because by no means am I going to disrespect and say that he is a running back. But in terms of running the football, he is going to be much more of a threat than Aaron Filo is going to be, just in terms of running the football. And so I'll throw the running back room into just the ground game as a whole. I expect much more in terms of Auburn's success than Florida's.
Right, and I think that that'll also have a fundamental big thing to do with these offensive coordinators, these play callers. Golish does like that. You know, he says, we're going to adapt to everything. That is very true. They are going to run the ball a lot, especially if they're going to be lining up wide sets. It's going to be... That's going to force the defense to spread out. That's going to create running lanes up the middle. Buster Faulkner, meanwhile, relied a lot on the quarterback run because of Haynes King. Be very interested to see, because he did not do that when Aaron Filo was in the game at Georgia Tech.
I know it was only, Bowling Green was the game that he played. Does Filo have, again, with your knowledge of Tech, does Filo have that dual threat in him, or is it much more of a pocket style?
I think he's a pocket style quarterback. He is one of the best pocket quarterbacks. He can sling the ball. Just pure passer is one of the, at least just looking at him, watching tape versus looking at statistics, he is one of the better throwers I've ever seen. He's broken records. But it was definitely a more pass-heavy offense against the I believe it was Gardner Webb was the game
maybe
that
that's
he started.
Right. Okay.
But Filo, you know, is not really a runner. Maybe we'll see that develop in his game a little bit, but he is not what Haynes King was for Georgia Tech last year. He was a lot more, they would have King run the ball and then Filo would throw it for certain games at the end of that season in 2023 or 2024. Because of Haynes King injuries, Filo did get extended time playing those games. It was a lot more throw down the field, pass the ball, which I think is what Buster wanted to do more. And so I think that he is going to – it's Byron Brown will be a plus for both passing and rushing, while Aaron Filo will not be for rushing. But I agree with you. I think that this running back room is deeper. You didn't even mention Alvin Henderson, the all-time Alabama touchdown and rushing yard leader, who I really hope to have a bigger role this year. I understand that there's a flooded running back room, but I think that this Auburn team could easily rush for over 2,500 yards or more just based on the amount of usage they're going to get.
Real quickly, before we go to break, sticking with the offensive side of the football, the receiver room. A little bit of question marks towards Auburn's, and I think that that's a very good thing because we've talked a lot about this over the past couple of weeks, but by no means am I going to say that it is a positive that Cam Coleman is not an Auburn Tiger and that Perry Thompson is not an Auburn Tiger and Eric Singleton is not an Auburn Tiger. He is on the Florida team. But guys like that, by no means am I saying that it is a positive that they are not on the team. Yet that being said, this Auburn team now has to find an identity in terms of the receiver room, and if that's Keyshawn Singleton, if that's Deshaun Spencer, the freshman that won MVP of the A-Day, and I know that Golish talked a lot about him in Mobile just a couple of days ago about the excitement that the freshman is bringing to this team. You don't have that, okay, this is wide receiver one, this is wide receiver two, this is wide receiver three. You would imagine, again, Keyshawn Singleton, just because of the relationship that he has with Byron Brown, that will be his go-to receiver. But how nice is it that you don't have that pressure of, all right, we have to give this guy 11 targets a game. We have to give this guy 9 targets right. a game. You have these, by no means not polished, but these underappreciated receivers in terms of just SEC football and pass catchers, to where I feel like there's a little bit more grit and a little bit more usage that can be spread out, which I think is a very, very good thing. That being said, I will give a little bit of an edge to the Florida wide receiver room. When you're looking at Eric Singleton Jr., you're looking at Vernell Brown, you're looking at Dallas Wilson, who is a redshirt freshman who is going to be one of the best players on the field whenever he steps onto the field.
Yes.
I will give the overall talent level to the Florida Gators.
Yeah, same thing. I was going to say all those names. Vernell Brown, Eric Singleton, Dallas Wilson, transfer Jalen Lloyd could be someone to watch out for. And another guy, another Georgia Tech guy that's going to be familiar with this system, Bailey Stockton. He was wide receiver one for Philo at Prince Avenue Christian in Bogart and became a guy at times for the Yellow Jackets that was able to make plays. And he's, again, familiar with the system. And he was able, he played all 13 games in 2024, started two games in 2025, had 200 receiving yards, a punt returner as well. He was very effective when he was on the field. So I would also give it over to Florida just because there's no more known qualities, while Auburn is a lot of, we're going to wait and see, especially in terms of the SEC.
Yeah. And by no means is that a negative whatsoever. No. And, again, a really good problem to have for this Auburn football team. We'll take a break. We'll come back, have a few minutes, and we'll break down the defensive side of the football and how we feel like there's a lot of arrows that point to the Auburn Tigers, and rightfully so. That before we get to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast at 3:30. Stick with us. We're back right after this.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I see. Sorry. Conversations going back from break. Never a positive. This segment's so short that I was thinking it was the 3:30 segment. But 24 minutes or
26 minutes into On the Line.
Yeah. 34 minutes to go here on the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. And probably won't be able to complete this conversation here this afternoon, which is a really good problem to have, which means we get to continue it here throughout the summer. But we're diving into Auburn and Florida and kind of the conversation, not quite a ranking, but who would you give the nod to in terms of each individual position? Talked about the offensive line maybe towards Florida just a little bit. The defensive line definitely towards the Tigers. Running back room you give towards the Tigers. Wide receiver you'd give the nod to Florida just in terms of overall polished talent, yet a very good thing for the Auburn Tigers. Going to the linebacker room, we can spend very little time talking about this
Auburn,
because I will tell you, it is the Auburn Tigers. Again,
yep.
This is the Auburn linebacker room, and it's so crazy to think about. It's almost like the ebbs and the flows of sports teams, and maybe not as much in college, but professionally, of, okay, this team was great for 10 years, now they're going to be bad for 5 years, and then they're going to have to rebuild and everything like that. The Auburn linebacker room feels kind of that way. You've always had that one guy that you really, really relied on and that you really trusted to kind of be that captain of the linebacker room. But after then, it was kind of the, all right, who's next? Who's going to follow that? Or again, I bring up Owen Papo. It's like when he got hurt, it was like, holy cow, who's going to be able to fill that role on the defensive side of the football? There were some question marks going into last year about what this linebacker room was going to look like. And then everybody found out about Xavier Atkins and the absolute ball hawk. And I've made jokes about it, that it feels like he, and I don't mean it this way legitimately, but it feels like he doesn't even necessarily need to be coached, because it's like DJ Durkin plays 10 on 11. And it's like, all right, Xavier Atkins, go get the football.
Yeah.
Go headhunt the running back. Go do whatever you need to do. And gosh, there's so much success on that side of things. We've dove into this linebacker room. Again, a top three unit in the country, you would imagine, given to the Auburn Tigers. And so I will easily say the Tigers in terms of the linebacker room.
Yeah, I mean, Summerall's a great defensive coach, and so these linebackers are going to still be pretty good. Guys, they have a lot of experience in the linebacker room with guys like Miles Graham, Aaron Childs, Jaden Robinson, Matthew Cade. All those guys are in their third year or later with the Florida Gators. Looking at the outside linebackers, Titus Bullard and Charles Emmanuel, and then looking on the as well as the, because they have it listed like star. It's a lot of first-year guys, but I think that this linebacker room for Florida is good, but Auburn's just is great, so I'm going to go Auburn.
Before the music kicks us out, secondary.
I don't know. I think Auburn's got solid guys, but it's no true superstars, while UF has those superstars.
I think there's a couple of them. A little bit more upperclassmen in the Florida side of things, just looking at the secondary. But you talk about all around, just the talent on that side of things. Hard not to pick the Auburn Tigers. We'll continue this conversation another day, maybe ask a question or two about it, see what Chris Gordy thinks. Locked On SEC Podcast, he joins us to talk that, Omaha, and all things recruiting. He joins us when we return.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Minutes into hour number two here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, and we have a guest that has been with us at this 3:30 spot for a long time, going to the Locked On SEC. Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast. Chris, how are you holding up in the Texas heat today? I was looking over in Houston, 96 degrees, a little warm.
Yeah, a little warm, and we got the World Cup going here too. And I went out there, the big the fan fest thing going with all the fans out there and everything. And I went out there yesterday, and yeah, it was like you're dying. I mean, like you have people from like Congo and places like that, and they're like, "Oh, it's fine." But then you've got the people, the Europeans, who are like, "This is way too hot." So yeah, it's just it's an interesting time with the World Cup and. Forgetting that summers in America are pretty brutal.
Hey, we've known for a long time that Europe cannot comprehend the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, I still can't get over that we play, you know, we play games in August and September and, you know, like the middle of the afternoon. Like people pass out from heat stroke in SEC stadiums across the country. It's crazy.
Speaking of the hottest thing in the SEC, Auburn recruiting right now has been on fire for Alex Golish. Chris, talk to me a little bit about what you've seen from Auburn on the recruiting trail thus far.
Yeah, I think they've been doing a great job. I mean, it's, you know, A&M and Oklahoma and Florida are kind of grabbing all the headlines because of what they're doing. And, I mean, A&M's getting ridiculous. They just grabbed another four-star linebacker today in Henderson, and it's, I mean, it's just insane. But I think Auburn's done a pretty good job here, particularly since we've turned the calendar, you know, into June. I think Isaac McNeil, the linebacker, is the stud of the group from the Mobile area. But I've heard some good things about Chance Gilbert going into Georgia and stealing him away. And it's been interesting. There's been a lot of big-name players from the state of Georgia that are not going to Georgia. They were able to flip a couple recently. They got the big old lineman that was heading to Florida. They got him to flip back to Georgia. But it's just interesting. I'd heard that they were kind of slow in their spending in NIL and all that. And so, you know, look, Georgia's not hurting, but it's not. No. They're not a top five class like we're used to seeing from Georgia. But again, benefits other schools like Auburn. And go get a Chance Gilbert that could slide right into your secondary next year if need be. And then, you know, some other guys, the Nate Kamba guy, I've heard good things about from the Charlotte area. You know, should key in as an interior guy on the D line, and then. You know, O-line is where I'd like to see him add a few more pieces. I like the Leighton Von Brandt kid and then the Reed Ramsier kid that they got from Orlando. But I'd like to see a few more bigger-time O-linemen on that group because, as we know, that's, you know, when you have an offensive coach like Alex Golish, I mean, it starts up front. You got to protect.
Speaking of recruiting in the state of Alabama, while Auburn is reaching new heights, Alabama over down in 16 in some ranking behind the Vanderbilts and Mississippi States of the world. What's happening with recruiting in Tuscaloosa, Chris?
Yeah, it's a little slow, man. It's a little slow to get going, and it's even, you know, what's crazier is they have one kid that's really keeping them from not being ranked in the hundreds right now. Elisha Haven is considered, you know, by a lot of people as, you know, the best quarterback in this group, or at least among the best, and you know, he's a top 10 recruit nationally. If they didn't have Elijah Haven in this group, I mean, I think 24/7 Sports has him ranked 70th right now. They'd be like 100th if they didn't have Elijah Haven. So, yeah, it's interesting, man. It's not the Nick Saban style of recruiting that we became so used to. They, you know, they had a little bit of carryover, a little residual the last 2 years there with with DeBoer, but this is a full-on Kalen DeBoer team now, and you know, whether it's NIL offers or what, I think you've lost a little bit of the luster of, oh, well, it's Nick Saban and Bama. They're going to be in the playoff every year. They're going to be competing for national championships. That's kind of out the window now. And so, yeah, I mean, we're used to the, you know, the Najee Harris's and the Trent Richardson's and all that. And now we've got Bama signs 2 3-star running backs in Nigel Newkirk and Tay Phillips. It's like, man, where are the big bulking stud backs? So, yeah, I don't know. You know, I've heard that they're being a little bit more selective, and obviously their NIL stuff was a little bit slow to get going there in the post-Saban era. But yeah, it's worth pointing out where Alabama is. Now, look, this could change very quickly because just about 2 weeks ago, LSU was ranked in the 60s, mm-hmm. and Lane Kiffin brings in Ed Ogeron, and suddenly they just start racking up recruit after recruit these last 2 weeks, and now LSU's in the top 20. So it can change very quickly, but I just look around and say, hey, Bama, what's going on here? What are you waiting for?
He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Have Chris Gordy with us on the phone lines. Chris, appreciate your time, as always, for taking some time to join us. And wanted to flip gears a little bit and turn our eyes towards the upcoming season of the SEC with the Auburn Tigers. And we've spent a lot of time talking about this Auburn-Florida game, the night game inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, the lone night game that Auburn was gifted in terms of Power 5 games inside their own stadium. What does the overall expectation look like? How much weight is put on this game just because of Florida and Auburn being in similar spots with first-year head coaches, with Golish and with Summerall, and how Auburn was kind of the favorite for Summerall for quite some time? Is there kind of a chess match that you imagine is going to go on in the media side of things, and how much pressure is there to win both of these, or this game for both of these coaches?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this a lot. I don't understand why. I mean, it's not like people don't know the name Alex Golish. Like, if you followed Tennessee for several years, so him under Heupel, and then what he's done with USF, making headlines with some of their big upset wins and beating Florida last year. I mean, people know who Alex Golish is, and yet, for some reason this offseason, everybody is all aboard the John Summerall hype train.
Yeah.
And not Alex Golish at Auburn. And, you know, maybe it's because Summerall snuck into the playoff last year with Tulane. Granted, they got their brains beat in by Ole Miss. But, you know, maybe that's part of it. But I don't get why everyone is so much higher on John Summerall right now instead of Alex Golish. And we just saw it. Chris Lowe put out his SEC power rankings, and he's got, you know, he's got Florida up there at 9. He's got Auburn down at 13. And it's like, what are you seeing from the Florida team and roster that is just that much dramatically better, you know, 5 spots better than what this Auburn team has? I just think it's a little bit disrespectful, and maybe Alex Golish likes that. Maybe they can fly under the radar here a little bit. But it's Florida seems to be the sexy pick, man. I mean, I saw Tom Fornelli from CBS said, yep. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just think that, you know, Florida's going to go over their 7.5 over-under win total. He said he thinks they're a dark horse for the playoff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, like, what is it about Florida that has you thinking playoff? And then everybody else is going, yeah, I mean, Auburn maybe 6-6, 7 wins at best. It's like, why are we so far on one side and not the other? So, I don't know. We'll find out when we kick off. Obviously, you know, Auburn's got a tough challenge right out of the gates with a pretty good Baylor team that is going to be led by, you know, most likely DJ Lagway, who was a big-time 5-star recruit that was at Florida. And so, you know, it's not going to be easy. But, yeah, that September 19th game against Florida. Luckily for Auburn, it's a night game at home. I just know Jordan-Hare is going to be rocking that night. But that's going to be the prove-it game. For even if they beat Baylor, that Week 3 game is going to be that game that sends a message across the SEC. Either it's going to be, oh my gosh, John Summerall and Florida are legit, or it's going to be, hey, maybe we didn't give Auburn enough credit, and Byron Brown and all these pieces from USF are about to make a lot of noise this year.
Yeah, funny that you mentioned, again, that Tom Fornelli article, because that we've been able to basically dissect all of that. And we did position rankings looking at this Florida team comparable to the Auburn Tiger team, and how, again, there's so many question marks between both of these rosters and the head coaches as well at the P4 level.
just in terms of having the HC label next to their name, are there any teams in the SEC, because you get to that point now of the win totals and how no teams in the SEC are projected more than 10.5 wins? Again, 9.5 is kind of where a couple of the top teams sit. Is there anybody that you look at here today and say, man, this win total is well too high, this win total is well too low, or is that more of a conversation that picks up in July?
Well, what I've been so intrigued by, guys, is we've been going by, you know, we have FanDuel over at Locked On SEC, mm-hmm. and we've been going with the FanDuel win totals since, gosh, I want to say March, so 3 months, and those win totals have not changed at all.
Yeah.
And yet, BetMGM's numbers came out this week, and I looked at them, and I had to check my vision. It was the exact same. Like, you know, another sports book, a different sports book, had the exact same win totals for every SEC team. And it's basically, it's Georgia and Texas at the top at 9.5. Then you got Bama, LSU, and A&M in that second tier, all at 8.5. And then a hodgepodge of Florida, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, and Tennessee at 7.5. And then Auburn, Mizzou, and South Carolina down there at 6.5. And so, you know, I think, like, as we've been discussing this throughout the offseason, it's like, which ones, you know, feel like surefire bets? And the ones I've leaned on is, you know, I think LSU over 8.5, I feel like Lane Kiffin can't afford to go less than 9-3. Look, they're hoping for playoffs in 10-2, but even 9-3 may not make the playoffs, but at least that hits the over if it's LSU. So I'm leaning that with them. You know, I almost want to go the other way with Florida. People saying 7.5. Look, 7-5 would be a hell of a season for John Summerall, yet that would be the under, and people will be disappointed. I think that's one that I just can't see Florida at 8 wins. But conversely, I think Auburn, I mean, it's a step forward. Look, 6-6 would be a step forward for Auburn.
Yeah.
If you get the bowl eligibility,
it would be
an improvement. Yeah. Factually, they would be a step forward from where they were. It wouldn't be exciting, but I think 7-5 would be kind of where I'd put them, and so I would lean the over there on 6-5. I'm not rooting for them to go 6-6, but I'm just saying, like, that's an improvement for Hugh Freeze had this team the last couple of years at the end of the season.
Hey, I mean, that was all that Freeze talked about, was just bowl eligibility. As long as you got that, that was all that mattered, and that couldn't even be done.
That's when I knew he was dead. When we went from talking building a playoff roster to, hey, man, everybody knows we're trying to get to a bowl game. We're like, what did you just say?
Yeah, they were just so close to a championship. Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast, and switching gears over to Omaha and the team that everyone's been talking about, and everyone was talking about the SEC powerhouse that when the bracket got released, everyone thought, of course, I'm sure you did, Chris Gordy, about where this team would be. Oklahoma, the SEC representative in the national championship. Talk to me about their path and how they got here and what's working for the Sooners.
Well, their bats have woken up. I mean, they might be playing their best offense here in Omaha that they've played all season. And really, if you want to go back to the regional and the super regional, they were really swinging a hot bat. Their pitching has really stepped up, too. I mean, you go back to a couple of weeks ago when they got blown out in two games at Florida. They got blown out two games at Arkansas. And their pitching just was not very good. And it has really settled down here when you consider, you know, they shut out Alabama last Saturday. Cord Rager, absolutely one of the best names in sports, but also pretty damn good on the mound.
I'd say so.
He was awesome. And then holding a team like Georgia, they've been one of the best hitting teams all season long in the country, to hold them the 3 runs on Monday and 4 runs on Wednesday, I thought was outstanding. So, yeah, they've gotten here because of their pitching. If they're going to win this whole thing, it's going to be because of their pitching, and it's led by a guy like Cord Rager, and then LJ Mercurius, who they've kind of used as both a starter and kind of coming out of the bullpen. And as you know, that's how teams kind of get creative here in the postseason. But if the pitching's on, man, I think they got a great chance to beat North Carolina. But keep those bats going, man. I mean, the 9 runs against Bama, the 11 runs last night against Georgia, just absolutely incredible, and I got to give Skip Johnson a hat tip. I didn't think they'd be here. And last thing on that, guys, what a story it would be for Oklahoma softball to not play for a championship and watch Texas win it 2 straight years in Oklahoma City, only for the baseball team to come out and win it all. Man, Patty Gasso at Oklahoma, she might have a little pressure on her there if she doesn't get the softball team back in a championship.
Yeah, no kidding. And a team that has beaten multiple regional hosts on their way to a national championship is the Oklahoma Sooners. And the head coach of Texas, I know it's somebody that you've been able to cover for quite some time, Mr. Schlossnagel. Is there any heat with what he's been able to do, or I guess the lack thereof, now the third most winning coach inside Omaha without a national championship? I believe 18 wins despite the Texas school that he brings there.
Yeah, I think the pressure starts to build a little bit on him, right? Because, I mean, he leaves A&M at the altar. He takes them to the College World Series in his first year in 2022, gets to the regionals the next year, and then this third year, College World Series finals, and they fall one game short, and not even 48 hours later, he's jumping ship to the arch rival of Texas Longhorns. I just he got them to Omaha, so it was a step forward after losing in the regionals last year to UTSA at home. But man, like, they regular season championships are great, but you know, it's one thing to win the SEC. In the SEC, we don't talk about winning the SEC. We talk about getting to Omaha and winning it all. So yeah, going into year three, there's certainly going to be pressure on Schlossnagel next year to try to win it all, because if he doesn't at least play for a title next year, we can always look back and go, man, by year three in College Station, he was playing for the College World Series final. If he doesn't get there by year three in Texas, we're going to go, hey, bro, what more do you need? You got all the money and all the resources in the world, and that was probably, you know, the big reasoning on why you left A&M and had to go to Texas.
Hey, maybe he'll jump ship to Lubbock, and Cody Campbell will try and pay him handsomely there. Chris Gordy.
Well, if he does, I just want one of those really awkward media interactions again, where he's like, "Hey, man, I'm a Texas Longhorn for life." And then 48 hours later, he's a Red Raider.
Maybe there could be one of those 21-minute videos just letting everybody know that this was the reason why, and we're in good spirits and we believe in this.
Yeah, absolutely. I still can't believe they didn't take that video down. It's still out there. And, man, what a bunch of egg on their face they have, everybody out there in Lubbock.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. Plug it all, my friend. Let the people know where they can hear more of your content with the Locked On SEC Network.
Yeah, it's Locked On SEC wherever you get your podcast. Ironically, you're probably not going to like what I have on the show tomorrow. Former Florida linebacker Brandon Seiler, who won the national championship with them 20 years ago. He's going to tell us why Florida is good. So it's, we'll have more Florida love on the show tomorrow. But Locked On SEC wherever you get your podcast. We've got some good shows up there all the week talking recruiting and other things. So check it out.
Thank you so much for your time, Chris. Enjoy the rest of your week. Maybe catch some World Cup down in Houston.
Yeah, absolutely. Not paying $1,100 to get in the stadium there. I'm good.
All right. Thank you so much. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. We'll take a quick break and wrap up the show right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. Appreciate Brad Law and Chris Gordy for joining us here this afternoon. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network talking about vacation time now for the gentleman and how good of a problem that is on that side of things. And Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, diving into all things Auburn recruiting, Florida as well, and just the dramatics that even in the off seasons, the college football still decides to bring. You talk about dramatics. Yes, you're only in day one right now in Shinnecock in New York for the U.S. Open, but there is an amateur currently leading the entire tournament. Xander Schauffele is 2-under through 3. Wyndham Clark, 2-under. Bryson DeChambeau, Billy Horschel. All of those guys now leading the tournament. That second wave of guys, maybe it's making the course a little bit more manageable, a little bit more player-friendly, because this morning was absolutely Brutal. Did you see the videos of the guy that I forgot exactly who it was, but chipped it from 100 yards and almost ran it past the flag and it still ran off the front side of the green? I mean,
Wow. It's
absolutely ridiculous to see, yes, the talent of these guys, but again, how difficult the course is. Puts it a little bit into perspective. And we have just a few moments before the music kicks us out of here, and talking about the World Cup in Houston. Had a text in the online text box, said, I don't know much about soccer, but I'm watching Switzerland right now, and I think it will be much better if they had a shot clock or a backcourt violation. And I think that is very, very funny because, yes, the amount of time, especially you see in soccer when a team gets a lead, of it's just keep away. It literally is like you're playing games with your friends and your younger brother comes out to try and hang out, and it's like, all right, cool, we're just going to keep the football or keep the soccer ball away from you.
Yeah,
it's literally how that feels. But I have always wondered that not that I know much about soccer at all, but before watching any of it, did always wonder about the backcourt violation in soccer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's offsides, which makes sense. You can't just have a guy basically just cherry pick down by the goal, and then the second you get a stop, you just boot it down to him. But I do think that, like, the time wasting, they try and crack down on it, but it's really just go to the corner, like, block the ball, and if they kick it out, it's a corner kick. You just do the exact same thing over and over and over again. Or you fake the injury. Maybe you want to do a substitution. It's always something weird with soccer or football, but yeah, maybe something like that could work. I don't know. We'll have to see. We're not FIFA, so.
No, we are far from it. We are 2-4, though. You're right here on ESPN 106.7. Really fun show tomorrow coming up for you. Free for all Friday. MLB changes in terms of what the draft could look like will spark a very, very fun conversation. 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. And sports are so much better with an opinion, whether you love them, whether you hate them. We're back tomorrow to talk all about it, and we hope you'll be there to join us.